The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
To all who come to our happy place, welcome to the No Guilt Disney podcast, where we have no guilt about our love for all things Disney.
We are three Disney fangirls who probably know more about the Disney parks than most grown women should, and we're perfectly okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know it.
Hello, everyone. My name is Teresa, and you can find me on Twitter at Gertie the Dino.
I'm Jane, and you can find me on Instagram at RealMousewifeWDW.
Hey, y'all. I'm Patty Holiday from NoGuiltDisney.com and No Guilt Travel, a travel agency that specializes in Disney and Universal vacations. You can find me on all socials at No Guilt Life, but mostly I'm on Twitter these days. Today, we are going to talk about all things Disney villains. Dun, dun, dun. This is going to be a lot of fun, I think. And I know people have their feelings about their villains. There's a lot of thought that maybe they're not all so bad, right? what is it that we love to love the bad guy? I don't know what this is about, but I'll admit I got a little crush on Loki. I mean, who doesn't, right? So let's dig in to the villains and talk about what it is about these characters that we like so much.
I mean, I just love them because the majority of them are jerks, and so am I. And I just really feel like these are my people.
Jane, you're not a jerk. You're from Long Island, but that doesn't make you a jerk. However, you do say it like it is, and I do appreciate that. So,
I have a little quote that I'm saving for later, but there is someone in our Facebook group that she wrote something this week, and I was like, it's as if I wrote it myself. We just became best friends.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear about that one. And what about you, Teresa? Do you like villains? Or are you just the true hero kind of person?
There are some villains I really like, especially the ones who you, not that you necessarily see it from their side, but I like it when they're a little more developed and you get where they're coming from. Like you get, okay, this is their motivation and I don't agree with it, but I understand it. But I think I mostly love villains just because I love the villain songs in almost every single Disney animated movie. I think they're some of the most fun songs, even though it's usually just plot exposition. But no, I think the villains have their place. They serve their purpose. I usually will cheer for the hero of the movie, but there are a few villains that I have a fondness for.
All right. Well, then let's jump in with our list. First, we're going to talk about who is your most justified or most redeemable of Disney villain? Teresa, you said this would be the villain that you'd like to see get their own Maleficent style movie.
That's too different.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have it all as the same, so I don't have two for this. So we're just going to wrap them both up together. So who do you like the most? Who do you want to see more from in the future?
Okay. Well, I broke them out separately. So the villain that I thought was most justified was Sid from Toy Story.
Dude, that's who I picked too.
Because, like, he's a kid. Like, this is what kids do. It's fine. He's having a moment. He'll be all right.
Well, that was kind of my perspective on this whole thing too, is I don't know that I need, you know, his whole backstory or a whole movie based on Sid. But
right. I didn't
like,
choose him for that.
Yeah, I was like, Sid, I have sons, right? And both of my sons, they're different in their own ways. And none of them were Sid-like, but little dudes are weird and they do weird things. And so not talking about like the blowing up of the toys, because that's a whole different level. But
right.
Even just the creativity of taking like a broken toy and not just tossing it away, but like he took it and he reimagined it and he created something totally different. I mean, creepy and scary and awful, but hey, points for creativity.
Made that work.
That's yes, right. And like, they worked.
He engineered it, like made these things work. And I was like, wow, if you show that like it's okay to be quirky and a little dark and be curious and make new things and whatever, but like, how did that develop and evolve? So I think Sid actually has a lot of redeeming qualities.
Yeah, I just feel like Sid maybe wasn't
just take the firecrackers away from him. Like, not play with fire as much.
Well, you know, that's bad parenting. So don't let your teen kid or preteen kid have firecrackers and we'll all be good. But yeah, I just felt like Sid kind of is this maligned character that's really not as bad as, you know, he is portrayed in the show. And if I remember, isn't it Toy Story 3 where the Easter egg is that Sid grows up to be the garbage man?
I think so.
Look, I know this is a really bizarre thing. Maybe it's because my family, there's six people in this house, but nothing excited me more when we moved here than to discover that garbage day was twice a week. Why? Because is I that love...
Not normal?
No. Everywhere else I've ever lived, it's only been once a week. So the fact that I could put my trash out to the curb, like it's just like this purging feeling. I can load up twice a week and throw it all at the curb. And these wonderful heroes that I call garbage men come and take all of the crap out of my house and take it all away. I have a big fondness for them. So even the fact that Sid became a garbage man, I was like, yay, go Sid. Yahoo.
I should have mentioned that I can put my garbage out 5 days a week.
Stop it. Well, yeah, but you mean your garbage men come or do you take it down to a dumpster?
No, I put it outside my door and they come and get it.
Wait.
I'll send you pictures later.
You don't have to take it downstairs?
No.
I
take the trash like bin from my kitchen and put it outside and they come and they empty it for me.
Okay, you're living the dream and I need to sell my house and buy an apartment because I would love that every day just to put my trash outside the door. You don't even have to take it downstairs or to the curb. I'm all about that life. Yeah.
The greatest thing was when I lived in Manhattan and you would just like when you had trash, you would go in the hallway and it went in a garbage chute. That was even better.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this suburban life, we've always lived in single family homes and that is not the case. And very rarely, this is the only place that I've ever had garbage disposal pick up twice a week. And like I said, life changing. I was like, this is my favorite. Mondays and Thursdays are my favorite days of the week. I know, weird. Anywho, okay, so that's Sid. That's Sid. So, we love Sid. We don't think he's all that bad.
But I did not pick him for the villain that I would like to see get his own movie.
Okay, who is that?
I would like to see Gaston. Because, first of all, I hate these like live action movies. I really just don't like them. But if we're going to do one, then like let's do Gaston. Like, he's funny. He's quirky. I like to look at him. Give me a story.
All right. Teresa, who do you think is justified? And then who would you want to see in your movie?
So, yeah, I definitely went for the first one. I definitely went justified, not necessarily redeemable. But okay. I get where they're coming from with this. Captain Hook. Because he just wanted some justice against a bratty kid who cut off his hand and made him watch while he fed it to a crocodile. Like, I'm sorry, understand. Fair. Like, you just want revenge. Like, I get that. Like I said, it's revenge against a child, like a permanent child, but still revenge against a child. So maybe not redeemable, but I get it.
Yep, yep.
The villain I would like to see get their own movie from their perspective, and this is my personal favorite villain, so it's not surprising, and that is Ursula. A lot of that is because originally in the script and the way it is in the Broadway show is that she's Triton's sister. And, you know, then there's that whole big story, you know, about her getting kicked out of the palace and her kind of, you know, it just adds the whole family dynamic to everything that she's doing. And I think it makes it so interesting. So I would love to see, like, what was that relationship between her and Triton and why did it crumble so much and to kind of turn her into the person that she is now. Plus, she's just also a really shrewd business person. So I think she, you know, she's just got skills going on. I love Ursula and I would love to see more about her.
All right. I like that. I'd watch that movie. Also, I was not aware. I was not aware that they were siblings. So that is a nice little twist on things. I like that. All right. We are going to jump into the best villain songs. And my vote goes to Gaston. The song where we hear all about Gaston as sung from his little sidekick, LeFou. It's just so clever and so well written. Gaston is the best and the rest is all drips. I mean, come on, guys. They also found a way to put in expectorating in a song, which that's a big word to throw in there and have, you know, kind of a rhyming thing going on. So I got to give it, it's so well written. And it was so fun to watch in both the live action. Thank you very much. I like live actions. In the live action as well as in the animated version. So Gaston gets best villain song from me.
So I chose Be Prepared.
Good one.
From The Lion King, because I just love this song. And I love it in... I love it in the original animated film, and I absolutely love it from the Broadway cast. And I'm going to pretend that it didn't happen in live action, because I like to pretend that Lion King live action didn't happen. I haven't heckled a movie so much since Twilight. So, but yeah, Be Prepared. I think that's like, it's a jam. Like I dance. It's on my running playlist. I just love it.
And like I said, in that one, I think that's probably like the most exposition-y of any Disney villain song, but they do it so well. Like everything about that is so great. Not shocking, because I just admitted she is my favorite villain. I went with Poor Unfortunate Souls for the best villain song. It's so fun to sing along. And like what you mentioned in Gaston, the lyrics from this are just so clever. Mm-hmm. Even when you get to the end where she's doing what the spell is, she does one. It's like Max Laryngitis. Like, you know, talking about actually taking Ariel's voice away. It's just the way they worked it in. And I think it's just, you know, it's fun to sing. It's just fun to... Pat Carroll does such an amazing job with the performance of it. So I've always grown up just loving Poor Unfortunate Souls, being one of my favorite Disney songs generally.
It is also a fantastic song. This is such like a hard topic though, because I feel like they're all so good.
They really are. Yeah, no, that is one thing that I do look forward to is the villain song in every single Disney movie. Yeah, they're good. All right, moving on our list here, we have the best villain sidekick. I don't know, maybe random, but maybe it's because I am not a cat person. I am definitely team dog all the way, but I saw Lucifer as one of the best villain sidekicks out there in the original Cinderella. This cat makes me laugh every time. I just thought he was well portrayed. He's just so smarmy and just such a jerk, which a lot of cats are. No offense to you cat lovers out there. I felt like he had the right amount of cattiness, but also the persona.
Cattiness.
combined there. So I gave my best villain award to Lucifer. Also, hello, Lucifer. Come on, man.
See, that's a good one. That didn't even occur to me, but I love this pick so much. It's such a good choice.
Yeah.
I couldn't decide between two, so I'm just going to say both and cheat a little bit, because it's villain, so why don't we get to bend the rules?
There you go.
So I went back and forth between Iago from Aladdin and then the hyenas from The Lion King. Like,
Excellent choices. I love the
performances for both, and I think the hyenas, because you get the dynamic of multiple. But I do love kind of when you get to the end, like, they're his sidekicks, but they're really just out for themselves. Like, as soon as it benefits them, they're just going to go turn and do their own thing. So I do love that beyond just being there to support the villain, they have their own thing going on, and they're like, all right, we're done with you now. We're not following you all the way to the end, so get in line.
So it's funny that... that you were between Yago and them, because I went between three options, and both of those were my options. With the third, which is ultimately who I picked, being Pain and Panic from Hercules. They're hilarious and ridiculous. And that's really all I love about things and people in general, is just be funny and ridiculous. And I love it. Plus, I really enjoy their color scheme.
Their color scheme. Hey, if you can't love a villain for any other reason, then that would be one that you can throw out there. So there you go. All right. All right. Who are we going to say for our most evil Disney villain? I got to say, before COVID, I might have given Mother Gothel the vote. Because, you know, she locked her kid inside a tower. She kept him away from society. I mean, it's very cruel, and you're stunting her happiness and everything by just keeping her to herself under the guise of got to keep you safe. Obviously, right now, we're all a little bit Mother Gothel, right? We're all keeping our kids somewhat. So I've come to understand and appreciate her on some levels, okay? So I am now taking her off of my most evil villain list. And I ended up going with Scar. Because this dude gives no Fs for anybody. I mean, he kills his brother. He ruins the Pride Lands. He makes the whole lion life look just downright miserable. They used to all be like happy, cool, chill lions. And once Scar took over, everybody is in pure misery. And he did it all out of jealousy and wanting the need for power. And, you know, in the end, he deserved what he gets. Okay. And I don't see anything redeeming in him at all. So Scar gets my vote for the most evil villain. I mean, if you kill your brother, it's kind of hard for me to come back from that one. But I have one more. I have this little special honors that I'm going to give. And this one is to the dude that kills Bambi's mama. Because y'all, we never see this person, but they killed Bambi's mama, and I have never recovered from seeing that. Never.
Oh my gosh.
It was awful. The worst. Scarred me for life. Speaking of scars.
I love the drama.
Hey, have you gone back to see that movie ever? It's even worse as an adult. But when I was like 6 years old watching that for the first time, I just was like, what did I just watch? Awful.
No. Yeah. Terrible. So I picked for the most evil Disney villain, Frollo from Hunchback, because he's pretty terrible. Creepy. He's super creepy, and he's kind of like, I don't like the word I'm looking for is not relatable, but like there are people in the real world that are like him. And for that, I'm out. Like, that's just too realistic for me. Yeah, I gotta go, Frollo. So,
same pick for me. Like, he's just super creepy. He's engaged in genocide. So you talk about, you know, killing your brother. Yes, killing your family, obviously, is like one level. But he wanted to wipe out, like, an entire ethnic group of people.
That's right. That's right.
And then, plus just, he's a little off. He's not altogether, but he believes that everything he's doing is justified. Like, he thinks that he is the only one who is in the right, which makes him, I think, you know, that makes you even more dangerous when you are just so determined that everyone else is wrong. You're the only one doing the right thing. But then you also recognize that even that you have these own creepy feelings inside of you, so you're going to take it out on other people.
Wow, I could say that sounds like somebody.
I don't, you know.
But we'll just move on past that. Anywho. All right, that's definitely a good choice. And I actually had him on my list for both of you to have in your top three villains. Like, I know you two well enough to know where your hearts are and who you would not like the most. So I actually had them like in the back of my head. I was, this was my not surprised face, you know, I knew that.
Who were the other two?
No, no, no. I mean, for the both of you, that's who I had. That's who my guess was. I was like, I bet somebody's going to say Frollo. It's going to be either Teresa or Jane. I'm not sure which one, maybe both. And then it turned out it was both of you guys. So look at me. Sometimes I know things. Not always, but sometimes. All right. We are now going to like go into the parks. And we're going to talk about the best villain in the theme parks. Now, this can be an attraction villain like the Yeti in Expedition Everest or a walk-around character. Or, Teresa likes to say,
it's Bob Chapek.
Clearly. All right, so we're done with this one. Let's move on to the next. Yeah, poor Bob.
Poor no second love around Bob.
Hey, he made choices. And although I did put close second is another Disney exec, Paul Pressler. And if you don't know who he is, they do talk about it. Like, he does appear in the Imagineering story, but especially Disney California Adventure had their 20th anniversary recently. And if you kind of look at some of the articles that came out about it, about why it had such a troubled beginning, it is primarily because of Paul Pressler. So the villains literally in the Disney theme parks based on how they shaped them and choices that they made around cutting budgets and just not wanting, basically doing everything they can to not have them succeed. So I went a little different direction.
Well, it's appreciated. all right. So my vote, and anybody that knows me knows this, that it's Gaston. He is my favorite Disney villain in the parks. I haven't done it recently because, well, he's not out. But it used to be walk into Main Street and go straight to see Gaston because he just amuses me so much. What I like about him is they get some really great cast members who are pretty glib with some phrases and can really like get you some zingers. And so he's always my favorite to go and visit. They were testing him once at Disneyland and I happened to be there. It was in preparation for having him come out during the Halloween party. And so they just had him kind of walking around because at Disneyland, that's what they do with characters. The characters get to stroll around and hang out. Well, I spotted him across the parade route, y'all, and I booked it. I ran across the parade route to get to Gaston. My friends were like, one minute Patty was here, the next minute we see her on the other side of the parade route taking a selfie with Gaston. Sorry, but had to be done. So he's hands down just my favorite, but I will also give a nod to Jafar. If you've ever seen this costumed character in the park, oh, that is one creepy mofo. He's pretty intimidating. First of all, he's huge. He's
huge.
Super tall. And I kept looking at it, trying to figure out like where the eyes are and how this poor cast member could see anything, because I'm not kidding. Like it has to be like his eyes had to be in his chest or in his neck or something, because this head on Jafar is just massive, but also the way that they have them act and the way they have them move. He's creepy. And I got to meet him once at Disneyland and I was like, it was the only character meet and greet that I waited in line. I was so excited to see him. And then I went over there. I was like, yeah, hurry up, take the picture. I got to go. Like this grown adult was freaked out by this costume character. So
I've met him numerous times, and it's always the hand, because the hands are ginormous, and the hands and the fingers always freak me out, and I'm like, I gotta go.
Bouncing out on this one.
Yeah. So I chose for best villain in the theme park, and technically it's not inside a theme park, but the Evil Queen at the like Snow White Artist Point dinner thing that I clearly don't know the name of. When I went to do that, the Evil Queen there was like on point. I had never had an interaction with a character that felt as authentic as that interaction. And I mean, she wasn't like super, super terrifying as much as like, she was hilarious in the way that the terrifying Evil Queen is. But I mean, everything, just every mannerism, everything that came out of her mouth, like the way she interacted with everybody. They knew this character inside and out like I'd never seen before. So, and I, every time I see the pictures come up from that, I'm always like, wow, that was such a great evil queen. So I picked that.
No, oh, she's great. No, I've actually had that same experience and, just loved her. She was fantastic.
I'll say I haven't met that walk around character yet, but I do love it. You talking about that reminded me of over in Disneyland, above the Snow White attraction, they do have the evil queen kind of, you know, opening the windows and then shutting it every so often. So if you're there and you look up, like, I think it's just one of those really nice little touches that Disneyland's Fantasyland has of just kind of character references that are not in your face, but they're nice if you catch them.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Disneyland's Evil Queen was also really good. I had a couple of run-ins with her as well. They're all so good. They're all so good. All right, Chisa, who do you have?
Oh, I gave mine.
Did you?
Yes. Bob Chapek.
It was Bob Chapek.
Oh, it really was Bob Chapek. Oh my God.
Oh God. Look, I can give reasons for this because, again, going back to cutting the budget for everything, he only wants like existing properties in the parks. He just hates original, he hates originality. And yeah, I'm no apologies. Like, I'm standing by it.
Never change, Teresa. Never change.
Okay, so if you want me to give like characters, I'll say the stepsisters from Cinderella. I think they're super fun. And every time, like any interaction I've seen anybody have with them is hilarious. So the Anastasia and Drizella from Cinderella.
Oh, they're my favorite. Yeah, yes. See, I'm all, oh no, like, they're
we,
my favorite.
We need to give them a favorites. Shout out because they're so good.
And there's this one Drizella there's this one that's at the Magic Kingdom that every time I see her, she's been there forever, but she's so good. I will be so sad if she ever has to age out because she's amazing. So yes, that's a good call. Good one, Teresa. I like that.
Yeah. And
I will say that they are, they were like the MVPs of character interactions during COVID because they would come out at the back of the castle and they talk to whoever they can see because you can't actually meet them. They're up on, I guess, like the balcony or whatever at the back of the castle talking to people in Fantasyland, and they wear like mic packs and they will talk to you. Like they're like, because we did Halloween when we went as the Alice in Wonderland group, and they were like, what's happening? Because my friend was dressed as Alice and they called her the maid. And they were like, what is the maid doing down there? Like, but such great interaction.
That's funny.
And so since we're on the topic of theme parks, I was curious when I was looking up this, I know for the longest time, there have always been people talking about, you know, the rumored Dark Kingdom Park or land within Magic Kingdom that was supposed to be, you know, overrun with villains. And I was kind of curious in going back, I'm like, how much of this is actually legitimate? What villain things have been proposed over time? And I did see that, you know, for the most part, it seems like the Dark Kingdom is just a big fan rumor, and that maybe there was a spark of an idea at some point, but nothing ever, you know, legitimately proposed. But there was something called Villain Mountain that was pitched as being the Magic Kingdom's second big flume ride. When they were trying to think about getting more exciting attractions into the Magic Kingdom around the time that Universal Studios was opening. And so this would have been kind of similar to Splash Mountain, and you would have been riding Hades' underworld boat from Hercules, and then guests would kind of run into these classic Disney villains before the big grand finale that had Chernabog from Fantasia. And this would have been over in the area that the Little Mermaid attraction is now. And so there was this whole big thing planned, and it never came to be. But as I was looking through that, I saw that over in Tokyo, there actually was an attraction completely focused around the villains. So we thought, who better to come on the show and talk about this Tokyo attraction than our good friend Chrissy. And if you're in our Facebook group, you obviously know who Chrissy is. She is one of our moderators in the group, and she's also just a big fan of podcasts in general. So she always likes to, when she hears a new episode, kind of keep the conversation going. And she's been one of my best Disney friends for quite a long time, so I'm always happy to have a chance to talk to her. So hello, Chrissy.
Hey, Teresa, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So why don't you tell people a little bit, I guess, about your background, and especially, you know, when you were living in Tokyo and this attraction that is called the Cinderella Castle Mystery Tour.
Sure. Yeah. So I was very lucky to grow up in a suburb of Tokyo, and I didn't realize how exciting it was that we were so close to Tokyo Disneyland now that I'm an adult and looking at a map and seeing yeah. that we're not that far away from it. I was born in Japan, moved to South Korea, and then moved back to Japan when I was 4. So that was right after Tokyo Disneyland opened in 85. So I was born in 84. So I have a deep kinship with the park. We visited at least every year until I graduated high school. So we went a lot.
I saw this attraction, you know, I always wanted to talk to you about it. And I remember, so I sent you the message and I was like, hey, Chrissy, does this attraction, like, do you remember this? Does it have any meaning to you? And your response was so great. You're like, oh, do I? So walk people through what the attraction was.
Sure. So this was a very unique attraction in many, many ways. One is that it was a walkthrough type of attraction that you're walking through with a cast member as a guide. And the whole thing was in Japanese. Thankfully, I do speak and understand Japanese, but even understanding it, it's still a really crazy attraction. So whether you understood the language or didn't, it was just nothing like at any other Disney park. First of all, the thing that you really want to consider that just makes you kind of be put in this like bizarro world is that the Cinderella Castle in Tokyo Disneyland is basically a replica of the castle at Magic Kingdom. So if you've visited Magic Kingdom many times, you're used to walking through, seeing that beautiful mosaic, then turning right and seeing the check-in desk for Cinderella's Royal Table. Back then, so all the way up till 2006 when this attraction closed, you'd turn that corner and see something very different. You'd see an attraction with a big gate in the front, and it said Cinderella's Mystery Tour. If you watched the movies or anything, you'd wonder, what could this possibly be about? When you walk through, there would be kind of like a first corral kind of area. If you think of other attractions that take in groups section by section, I can't really remember how many people were in each group, but it was small enough that one tour guide could manage getting them through. The first thing you'd walk through, you'd have the cast member introduce themselves, and they would tell you a little bit about what you're going to do. You're thinking that you're signed up for just a nice little tour of the castle, but in the back of your mind, you're thinking mystery tour. What's the mystery part of this? And the first scene that you see is like a room full of portraits. I had to kind of refresh my memory on what exactly you saw, but you would see portraits of Cinderella, Pinocchio, Aurora, Snow White, and Taran, who was from The Black Cauldron, a very not as watched, maybe underrated. Maybe some people really like this movie. It's an interesting kind of a darker one. You see that, and then all of a sudden, everything changes, and then that's what sets you up for this attraction. As you go through, you see a magic mirror appear, the one from Snow White. So you're like, okay. It gives you kind of an ominous greeting, kind of telling you what, like, if you really want to know the story behind these stories, you need to meet all the characters, kind of a gist like that. And this is the part that you probably would just really love as a kid, is that like a secret door opens and everybody has to follow through. All those portraits have become villain portraits. It's really dark, kind of a dingy. I mean, you are in a dungeon, so it's very dark. You're following through.
Is that kind of like, where you talk about the portraits changing, is that kind of like, I guess, the the Disneyland Haunted Mansion is a little closer, where it's, you know, like the lightning strikes and it changes those portraits in that walkway.
Yeah, you do get a similar vibe to that. And you're kind of like, well, what's going on here? It's a very, very simple kind of changeover, but it's very impactful because you're like, wow, what's going on? You go down and you see like this weird, like laboratory kind of situation. You see some kind of props that you would immediately think of the villains associated with them, like a poison apple, a magic potion. You see the crow from Snow White, not Snow White, from Sleeping Beauty. That was Maleficent's buddy. it's just very crazy. And then, I mean, it's kind of a blur in my mind at this point. I've rewatched some YouTube videos. It doesn't really help because of the quality of them, but you start to hear music from Fantasia, from Chernabog's scene. Pretty scary. If you weren't scared by that point, it's very loud, so it'd be very scary.
Right. And what struck me from when I watched the video before, like, it's not just, you know, because I think people, if you've been to California and Disneyland, you might also be picturing the Sleeping Beauty Castle does have a walkthrough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do see these different scenes, but this is, it's definitely more intense because these had like actual animatronics in there. And it's kind of not just like looking through windows at these different scenes, but like you're fully in the action.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, you're really immersed in it. Everything is life size. To that point, you're like, it's so dark, and they really use those great illusions. Kind of like the first thing I think of is like Pirates of the Caribbean when you're in that like the cannonball scene. Like it just like the ceiling seems limitless. You're like, how big is this room I'm in? It's intense. You're like
so free. Well, and so when you were there as a kid, was it something that it was sort of still kind of tame and mild, or was it actually, you know, did it actually have like that creepy factor?
As a kid, it was definitely really scary, but
but you also had, even though it was scary, I know you were talking about, there is something very specific that even when it scared you, you kept wanting to go back and do this attraction.
This is so true. Yeah. When we chatted about this before, the thing that really sticks in my memory, no matter how scary it was, you know, as a kid or as an adult, you might have like an ulterior motive or motivation for doing something. In this attraction, there actually was an audience participation sort of situation going on. So as you went further down into this cavern, you really reached the scariest part, which relates back to seeing that portrait of Taran. And you see the Horned King from the Black Cauldron. This thing was huge. It was scary. The Black Cauldron, if you've seen the movie, oh my gosh, you're in that scene. And there's just so many effects going on. It's very terrifying. But that cast member that took you on that tour then chooses one brave person that's supposed to be kind of alike Taran. And they get to hold up the sword of truth or destiny or whatever that is. I can't remember the exact name, but you lift it up and, you know, these magical things happen and, you know, good defeats evil. And you know what? I was never picked for that darn thing as many times as we went. And my cousin got picked almost every time that we went. So I was, you know, a little bitter, you know, 30 years later.
Right. You're not holding on to that at all.
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, I'm really curious on your thoughts because we've talked a little bit about some of the similar style attractions or similar elements in some of the domestic parks that are in this attraction. I'm curious, in your mind, would something like this work in like the domestic parks, or was it very much like, you know, I'm curious if you think it would work well here, if guests would respond to it the same way that they did in Tokyo, or if it's just more something that's designed for that audience?
You know, that's a really a great question because I think certain elements of it would translate really well. The fact that the show is basically the same show, you know, however many times they rotate it in a day, but with a different tour guide and with a different participant, you know, it's a different experience every time. So the like not ride ability, because not a ride, but you know, the ability to repeat it is pretty high. I think a lot of people would probably do it again. I don't think it's one of those that someone would do, oh, one and done, never again. But the thing that would definitely concern me about an attraction like this is the accessibility of it. It wouldn't be, I mean, first of all, like with the one that we did, it was in Japanese only. So you miss so much of the story when it's only in one language. I think maybe there might be technology to help with that. Like I don't know, which would be like not distracting in that. Also, it's a lot of, it is a walkthrough attraction. So, you know, there was not a way to experience it if you were like in a wheelchair or crutches or something, because there's a lot of steps. However, I don't know, it seems like it would be a cool concept, really, like if you're going to like blue sky it, if it was like a ride through, if it was like a dark ride and they were able to implement like more mix of characters. So like some ones that
are
more popular, but also like it would be kind of cool to see those obscure characters, because I think like big Disney fans would love to kind of see them all together. I think that'd be really neat.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's interesting you mentioned the point about the language. So when I did watch the video, that was something that I was like, that was one of the reasons I was like, I'm very excited to have Chrissy come on here so she can kind of like talk me through what's happening, because, you know, because it is all in Japanese, which I don't know. But I did love, even if I couldn't tell exactly what the cast members were saying, like they were so into it and their inflection was great. So you could tell like they were really doing, you know, as you would expect a Disney cast member to do, who's doing any kind of like spieling attraction, you know, they are 100% committed and into it. And you could tell that got the audience into it. So even though I didn't quite know what was happening, I could still kind of get the tone that they were trying to set.
For sure. And just the way that you described it, it kind of reminded me of like when you have the opportunity to ride a Jungle Cruise and you have guests on with you that don't know what's going on. Like, even if they don't get it, if there's other people laughing, then, you know, that can create the vibe. So I imagine that just like an attraction like that, probably some tours of the Mystery Tour were a little more successful than others.
Right, yeah.
Depending on the mix of the audience. So that would be kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, the opportunities, I think, obviously not anytime soon, but it would be something really neat to see an attraction like that. That was kind of more, it seems like they could use like a lot of the technology like that, you know, that basically they have and can develop to make an attraction that is like unique each time.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming on and talking about that.
Sure thing.
All right. All right, and so we have one final category, which if you're in the Facebook group, you know what this is, because we did ask who your favorite villains were. And so there were votes for, there was a lot of votes for a lot of different villains. So we did have people voting for Frollo. We had Ursula, Lady Tremaine, Cruella. We had the Beagle Boys, which I thought was an interesting choice. I was not one that came to my mind. We also had a couple for Loki, but the clear winner of all of this was Maleficent, which I wasn't really shocking to me. A little surprising that we hadn't talked about her too much yet in this podcast yet, but Maleficent was definitely the clear winner, a fan favorite in the No Guilt Disney group.
So, I do want to point out the one thing. So Andrea in our Facebook group said, and I don't know this, Andrea, at all, but we just became best friends. Either Ursula, because that eyeshadow. Really, I just love anyone who appreciates the makeup of all of the villains. Or Maleficent, because she's petty AF. And low-key love that about her. And yes, Andrea, all of the above. Because truthfully, overall, if I had to choose my favorite villain, it's Maleficent all day, every day. It always has been. And I think it's because I just love the color purple. So.
Oh, they were fun. Yeah, somebody in that list also put Dr. Facilier. And I got to say, not only was he a really like good and creepy in the movie, but he's also pretty amazing if you ever get to meet him at Disneyland. I had a run-in with him where basically I was like chasing him around the boat to try to get him to stop and take a picture with me. And I was like, hi, can I get a picture with you? He was like, I don't know, can you? And then he'd walk away. And I was like, okay.
You're like, oh, so this is a bit now.
Yeah, basically. Oh, anyway, well, those are the villains. Those are all, you know, who we love, who we want to see more of, even a little bit of history there from Japan and all of this. This is one of my favorite episodes. So thanks for joining us on this one.
So if you want to talk about your favorite villains or you have a topic that you want us to talk about, you can join us in our Facebook group at No Guilt Disney, or you can send us an email at noguiltdisneypod@gmail.com.
And make sure you keep joining us each week on the No Guilt Disney podcast, because as Patty likes to say,
it's no fun to fangirl the bad guys and gals alone. Bye, y'all.